On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we talk to UFC Octagon announcer and Raiders home game announcer Bruce Buffer. Had a great conversation with him. We talk about the questions we would ask if we're Mark Davis of the potential new head coaches for the Raiders. And we give out rookie grades for this fantastic rookie class. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto. Let's have some fun today. Loaded show. Bring some star power. Bruce Buffer.
Ooh.
The UFC Octagon announcer is going to join us. Also,
Big
the
guns.
Announcer for Raiders home games. It was going to break a little news today
Raiders.
As well. We had a really good interview with them. What a crazy weekend of divisional games. Like the wild card weekend, it was like all trash games except for Raiders Bengals, like the one like exciting game of the weekend. And then you have literally just like back to back to back to back barn burners, last second field goals. Overtime, Brady losing. It's always nice when Tuck Real Tommy takes an L in the playoffs. Like it was the best weekend of football I think that ever existed in playoff football.
I never really understood why teams went prevent D and just let teams kind of inch their way down the field. That's one thing. But then teams going all out blitz and like when you have when you're in the playoffs and you're deep in the playoffs, these quarterbacks know what to do with the blitz. And like these teams are all out blitzing and just leaving these one-on-one players out there. And these teams are just getting constantly burned on these cover zeros and shit. And these like all out blitzes. And yeah, man, freaking Cooper Kupp getting behind the defense and burning the Bucks, and you got fucking the
Niners Bills, just the, limping into wins, just like not scoring touchdowns but winning.
Fucking the Bucks getting their dicks kicked in, and the freaking Karen Rodgers getting his dick kicked in, and
a lot of dicks getting kicked. It was dick kicking season for sure.
There's a guy at the gym. His name is Mo. Big up to Mo. Whenever we spar, he gets at least
money,
one
more
dick
problems.
Kick. He gets at least one dick kick in.
It he can't be an accident. He's like just sitting, he's like Chet Congo in Bellator. Just one good knee to the nuts, just to let you know every time.
He kicked a chick today in the freaking snatch, and she's like, "Oh fuck!"
Did
and I'm like,
down?
"Oh yeah, she went down." And I'm like, oh, shit. And she's like, oh, fuck. And I'm like, oh, crap. And she's like, Mo, you kicked me in the dick.
Watch, she's going to start wearing a cup to practice for the rest of her life.
I don't know why anyone spars with him with no cup. Like, you have to. A tie cup, too. It's got to be a steel tie cup. No regular cup.
But it hurts you more than it hurts them.
Yeah.
Make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. That's the best way to keep yourself abreast of everything that we're doing here on the Autumn Windbags. A lot of cool stuff coming up. We're going to do some live chats regularly. Now that there isn't actual football season where it's like, all right, going over the game, going over the next game, doing a post-game show. It's really like formulaic. You know what I mean? Still fun. We're still doing new stuff, but it's just generally a formula. Now we're free to do all kinds of different stuff that we're going to be releasing as time goes by. We're going to upgrade our production a little bit. We're going to do some scheduled live chats. Get subscribed.
No more missionary with the lights off. Okay. We're going to experiment a little bit here.
Yeah. We're not just going to like poke it out of the hole in our boxers and just like kind of go. It's like, no, we're going to get weird. You know what I'm saying? We're going to leave the drapes open. You know what I'm saying? We're going to leave the lights on.
Hello.
We're going to make some noises.
Are you under the bridge or over the bridge guy?
I don't know the reference. Teach me something.
Are you like, do you open the hole? Are you under the bridge? Are you? You pull the underwear
over
the bridge. Yeah,
absolutely over. Yeah,
my brother's an under the bridge guy. Like he spreads it and he sticks his dick I don't know why he does that.
I'm like, ask me this. When you go over the bridge, do the balls come with, or are you just dick?
I'm all just dick.
Me too. I don't understand the ball move. Unless it's just like the fun of holding your own balls. Like it's an excuse, you know? Like you've been told ever since your little kid stopped playing with your balls. You're like, no, I'm just taking a pee. Here's my excuse. All right. That's really, really graphic and great way to start this today's show.
I don't understand why you went there, but whatever.
You're the one that wanted to talk bridges.
Whoa, I said under the bridge. Whoa, are you going?
You're gonna go like Golden Gate Bridge talk. And I was like, right? Okay. Question of the day. We're gonna pin this question in the comment section. We're curious what you have to say. We'll address in one up win back for the next show. Simple question: who should be the Raiders' next head coach? It has been a short search. It's been about 10 days since this search has been on. Roughly 10 days.
We gotta answer that one soon, though. I mean, it's getting to that time.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. I think when football is still being played, it's not as imminent. Right. When the playoffs are still happening, because we'll get to it in a second. But like DeMeco Ryans, like he should be a candidate, but he's defensive coordinating for the Niners.
Should he?
I mean, that's the question, right? I mean, he's getting requested for interviews, but he's still coaching football. Right. And the idea is if you're picking up defensive or offensive coordinators to be your new head coach, you kind of want him to be in the playoffs. Right. You're not picking up the offensive coordinator for the Jets. You're not picking up the defensive coordinator for the Jaguars. Right. You're picking up coordinators from the Chiefs and the Niners and the Bucks, like teams that are winning in the postseason. Like that's Jaguars. Who you want. So that's the question. I actually posted this question for all y'all on YouTube in a poll of the current candidates who you want to see as the Raiders head coach. So there's four coaches that have been either interviewed or are going to be interviewed by Mark Davis. And then a fifth wild card who's been tied through rumor and innuendo.
Ooh, Todd Bowles getting no love.
And that's Jim Harbaugh. So not surprising, name value scored big with our poll question. Of the five coaches, Rich Bisaccia, Jim Harbaugh, Gerard Mayo, DeMeco Ryans, and Todd Bowles, Jim Harbaugh got over half of all the votes, 56%. Rich Bisaccia, the current interim head coach, got 28%. And then a giant drop-off. Ryan's at 7%, Bowles at 6%, Mayo at 3%. So according to Autumn Windbag viewers, they're going with the big Z. Like all these like random guys bringing brought in, all these random coordinators bringing brought in from other successful NFL teams. You guys don't care. You want just Jim Harbaugh, who's currently coaching at Michigan, and keeping Rich Bisaccia, the interim coach.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we don't want a defensive coach.
I mean, you're noticing a trend, right? Mayo, Ryans, and Bowles, all defensive coordinators, right? So those are the five guys. Rich Bisaccia, he was interviewed last week.
Yeah.
DeMeco Ryans, he's going to be interviewed after the NFC title game, maybe probably after the Super Bowl if they go. Todd Bowles, he's going to be interviewed Thursday. As you're watching or listening to this, it might be today. And then Gerard Mayo was interviewed on Tuesday. So a couple of things. Rich Bisaccia, it really felt like the tea leaves kind of read and like the beat writers kind of gave the idea that when he was interviewed last week, it was more like an exit interview. It's like, all right, we'll do this courtesy. Hey, you took us to the playoffs. You're a member of the family. The players love you. You know, we'll give you your shot. It was kind of like a token interview. It's like, well, you know, go ahead.
Like.
Yeah, like go ahead, young man. Like, yeah, we'll bring you in. Just it's like when you're like nine and your dad like sits you on your lap to drive the car and he's like pushing the pedals and like holding the steering wheel at the bottom. It's like, oh, good job, son. You're driving, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's like the kind of vibe that it gave. But after the interview, the narrative completely did a 180. It was like, huh, now he may be taking, you know, considered seriously as an actual candidate and not just kind of given this token interview to be nice.
One of the things that you have to take a look at is all of the different candidates that are being asked to interview after Bisaccia interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have these candidates that are being asked to interview before Bisaccia interviews, that's one thing. but you're having candidates like Ryans and Bowles being asked to interview after Bisaccia already interviewed, which doesn't bode well for Bisaccia if you're still looking for candidates to interview after you've already done the job for over half the season and interviewed for the job, and they're still looking for more people to interview.
I don't feel that strongly about it. I feel like even if I'm glad that Mark Davis is doing his due diligence. Like, let's say, because it would be very Mark Davis, right? If he was just like, I'm in love with Jim Harbaugh. All or nothing. I'll give him whatever he wants. 10 years, $100 million. You're the czar. You're the GM, right? Like, that would be a very Mark Davis thing, right? He just did it with Gruden. But I love that he's doing the due diligence. Whether he interviewed Mitch Trubisaccia and in the back of his mind, he's like, I'm hiring this guy. He's the man. But let me still keep going. Let me not just fall in love with some dude and, you know, take that guy right away.
I'm
hoping that's what he's doing. He's like, no, I'm going to interview everybody, change my mind if you can, even if I'm favoring somebody, mm-hmm. even if there's someone that I want, I'm going to genuinely, not just tokenly, genuinely interview all these candidates. And I hope that he's learned that after the debacle that was pushing all your chips on John Gruden because, you know, you're homies 10 years ago and he laughs at your jokes.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. It's a good hiring practice to know what you're looking for when you're looking to hire. I said it the last episode is when you're looking to hire, it's what I did when I did for a lot of years is you have a template. You know what traits and characteristics you're looking for, and that's what you ask. That's what you're kind of weed out, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how much experience the people have or what type of track record they have at other places. If they have those traits and they have those characteristics, you can roll with that.
Yeah.
And I mean, look at Mike Tomlin. He didn't have any head coaching experience or any coordinator experience before he got hired. Mm-hmm. Look at John Harbaugh. He didn't have any of that experience before he got hired.
He knocked socks off with an interview, right? Like that's where
he had those traits and he just, he got the interview and he knocked it out of the park and, you know, he wowed them and he made them give him the job. And that's why I'm not opposed to any one of these guys getting the job. That's what gives me kind of okay, let's just wait and see. Because if Mark Davis is sitting back and saying, look, I don't know what I'm looking for and I know what I'm, and I know when I find it. And I'm waiting for somebody to give me these type of feels in this interview. And when I get when I sense these types of traits, when I get these type of feels in this interview, this is my guy.
Yeah. You want to get the tingling in your plums before you know.
Yeah, the blue.
I also think too, like a really good interview. Like if you're getting interviewed, right? Like how secretive are NFL coaches, right? They don't give any, like they generally almost give nothing to the media. Playbooks are secret, right? Practices are, you know, media is only available for this tiny little window and we're just going to do basic drills when they're there, mm-hmm. right? It's like very, very secretive. Now, if you're Mark Davis, you can get to interview these guys. They're coming with the heat. Here's my playbook. Here's my plan. Here's who's going to be my defensive coordinator, my offensive coordinator. Here's what I'm going to change. Here's what we do in San Francisco. Here's what we do in New England that I want to do here. Here's like, you know, I'm not going to give you all the secrets, but you're going to give something, right? You're trying to get that job. And your equity in this negotiation is, here's what I'm bringing to the table. I can talk all day long. I'm a leader. I can speak in abstracts all day long. It's not going to get you anywhere, right? You want to be like, here's what I'm going to do on day one specifically. That's going to turn this playoff team into a Super Bowl contender. Like when I got the job at the UFC, right? I got the call. Like, hey, are you interested? And all right, great. We'll call you back and, you know, we'll do the full interview in a couple days from now. During that time, I was researching all like the broadcasts, like instead of just watching the fights, like as a fan or as a writer, I'm like, all right, how can I make this broadcast better? And when they called me back, he's like, hey, do you want, you know, let's do the standard issue interview. And I'm like, all right, here's what I want to change. Like during weigh-ins, I want to do this. You know, I want this kind of data when there's live fights. Like here's very specific things I want to do. And I got the job. Literally my roommate got interviewed as well. And I got it over him, like, because he just, you know, I'm sure he gave a good interview and he's certainly qualified, but I came with ammo. I came with a plan. I came with some like serious X's and O's. And so if Mark Davis can get that out of these guys, the more he hears, you'd be like, hey. And then, when you're interviewing for a head coaching position, you get interviewed multiple times, right? It's not just one time. It's like, all right, come in for a second interview, come in for a third interview. If he goes through all these guys, Todd Bowles tells him, hey, this is what we do with our linebackers. D'Amico Ryan's like, all right, here's some of the secrets to our blitzes. And then Mark Davis goes back to Bisaccia or Harbaugh or whoever who's the front runner and be like, here's what Mayo said. What would you do about it? Here's what Ryan said. What would you do about it? Right. It's just, this is the rare opportunity where a coach is as much of an open book as an NFL coach will ever be.
Dude, you know what I would do? I'd be like, look, this is what the Chiefs do. This is what I would do. This is what the Chargers do. Mm-hmm. This is how the pieces that we have, this is how I would do. This is how we would beat the Chiefs. This is how we would beat the Broncos. This is how we would beat the Chargers. This is how we would be the class of the AFC. This is how we would do this. That's how you have to freaking feed a Davis ego.
Yeah.
That's how you got to do it, man.
I want to play an Al Davis-style defense. Just like
Raiders football.
Start quoting Al Davis, right? Things like that.
In the first five plays.
So it's basically like three tiers of coaches, right? There's like Rich Bisaccia, who's kind of in his own world because he's the interim coach. He's already in, right? So he's viewed differently. Jim Harbaugh is like the big sexy name, but he's the only one with no interview scheduled because it's all rumor. Like I'm not saying there's no chance Jim Harbaugh goes to the NFL, but it still smells, tastes, and feels to me like Harbaugh is just using the NFL for leverage to get more out of Michigan. I could be wrong. Maybe he's wide open to it. Maybe that's what he's thinking, but the NFL could come with a great deal he can't say no to. Mm-hmm. I don't know, right? Like, but it just feels to me like it's a leverage move by Harbaugh. He's kind of in his own world. But then Gerard Mayo, D'Amico Ryans, and Todd Bowles are all kind of the same, right? Defensive coordinators. Two of them are really young. Two of them are younger than us. And they're all kind of like, I feel like they're all kind of in their own world, right? That's why I feel like Bisaccia and Harbaugh on our poll question that we did were so much harder than the other three, because the other three kind of feel like the same. Like, they're very different guys, obviously, but defensive coordinators from, winning franchises, you kind of lump them all together a little bit, which is why none of those three guys really stand out amongst the three to me, and I think to most people.
Well, that's why the interview process is so important.
Why are you different?
What's your scheme like? What is your leadership style like? What is your communication style like? That's the big thing. Is you can be the smartest guy in the room. If you can't communicate your knowledge, if you can't communicate that knowledge to be absorbed by somebody else, that's a big problem with a lot of coaches out there who are really smart. They can't communicate that knowledge to other people. That's why they're not good coaches.
That's why like great natural athletes never make good coaches.
Look at Gunther. He's by all accounts, he's a smart guy. He develops a good defense, but the way he communicated that defense wasn't good. So the guys were lost. I mean, he gets jobs at different places, but being a DC just wasn't for him. So that's a huge thing. And then you look at a guy like Bradley, who's a great communicator, keeps things a little bit more simple, and his scheme is not very complex, but just the way he communicates it, makes it simple, makes it easy, and it makes a world of difference. So that's the thing you have to take a look at too, is how do they communicate? What's their communication style? What is their disciplinary style? What's their, their teaching style? Just because you're a good communicator, are you a good teacher? Are you a good instructor? Are you a good developer? Are you good talent? Are you good? Do you have a good eye for talent? These are things that you have to go through. And they can, just because they're all defensive coordinators, Mayo, Ryans, and Bowles, just that doesn't mean anything. They could be vastly different in those other three, in all those other fields.
So for each of those five head coaching candidates, and again, two have been interviewed, two are about to be interviewed, and then Harbaugh is kind of a wild card, but he's been tied to it. So we'll include him here. There's basically five headliners, five contenders for head coach. And so what we did is we came up with, what is the number one question Mark Davis should ask each guy, right? Each new coaching candidate, one question. For Rich Bisaccia, we said, what have you done to prove you can take your own team to the playoffs? because clearly Rich Bisaccia did a fantastic job of guiding a team that lost their head coach after 5 weeks. All the other drama, right? Losing the, you know, the wide receiver, you know, Henry Ruggs, how we lost him. Darren Waller, the way that it went, just all the tragedies they had to overcome. He was able to keep that team together. I think he was the perfect guy for that specific job. Now, going through an offseason program, going through free agency, building schemes, like starting anew, can he be that guy? And there's obviously a lot of crossover in those two skills, but is it that much different? And that would be, if I'm Mark Davis, I'm like, all right, Rich, the results are clearly on your side for what you accomplished last season. Prove to me that you can replicate those results in a vastly different scenario. Now, it should be, now, Rich Bisaccia's answer should be, yeah, it's going to be easier this time. Like, I don't have to overcome all this shit, right? I can start from the beginning and do it all. Like, that should be Rich Bisaccia's answer, but he's going to have to convince Mark Davis that he can do that in that interview, because Bisaccia's got a lot of results in his corner. Now it's a matter of convincing that the future can match the results that he had last season.
Yeah, I mean, it's we struggle to find a question to ask because the answers are also very difficult. The answers from Bisaccia are difficult to come by because there's a lot of unknowns. Even the results that he had are. They're not very concrete. The answers weren't very convincing. Did he win games? Of course he won games, but he also had a lot of last second victories. He was upside down in average. His coach teams scored 21.5 points per game, but gave up 26.5 points per game. Mm-hmm. He had the worst point differential for any team that made the playoffs ever in NFL history. I mean, a lot of things it point to this being a very fortunate outcome for this team to make the playoffs. Yeah. How do you account for that?
The answer, if I'm Rich Bisaccia, is coaching. Like, yeah, I overcame all those things, right?
Well,
like,
I mean, that would be his answer. But that's the answer in a vacuum. The problem is that year is over. Now you're going to play a second place schedule. See, the thing is winning is everything when it's right in front of you. When you're left to run an organization, you can't just look in a vacuum, right? You have to look years down the line. When you're in an executive position, you have to look years down the line, right? That's the difference between a daily fantasy league and having a legacy
dynasty league.
That's a completely different draft that you're having. And, Bisaccia would be great in like a daily fantasy league type of coach, but maybe not so great in a dynasty league.
Bisaccia,
and that's the big difference.
We were talking about this pre-show. Like, Bisaccia, like, he's got so much, like, what he accomplished this season in such a results-driven league, right? You just need wins, get to the playoff, and win. And he did that, right? It was literally the second-best Raiders season of the last 20 years. Two decades was the second-best. And he did it with all that, you know, with only being coached for three-quarters of the season and all the shit they had to overcome, right? Like, that is a genuine accomplishment you can't take away from him. But what Bisaccia has is just kind of like, and I feel like why you're so sour to it and why so many people are sour to it, he just doesn't have this weird it factor that everyone's talking about. And you can't vocalize it. You can't verbalize why it's not there. But I think that's the main, because like so many people I talk to, I'm picking on you specifically, Soto, because you're here, but like you and so many other people, it's just like, I don't want him. He's not the guy. It's like, well, he did X, Y, and Z. Like no one else in the last 20 years did X, Y, and Z. It's like, yeah, but he's just not the guy. And it's just like this weird gut feeling about him that people aren't sold on.
Yeah, I mean, it goes a little bit deeper than that. There's a lot of peripheral stats that project out further than just this season that you have to take a look at that don't look good for him. And you take a look at a lot of other things, like we don't, with things that we'll never know, right? A lot of the questions that he was asked, specifically like offensive and defensive questions, that he just didn't answer during press conferences, that didn't look good.
I'm fine with that. Like, you don't want to give detailed defensive and offensive answers.
The thing is, for the coaches to hear. But the problem is with that is these aren't things that are asked beforehand. These are questions that are asked like, hey, this happened in the game that just played. What was your thought process? It's not like the coaches aren't going to be able to pick that up in film. You know, like, you can still answer the question, but
I think you fell into the actual problem here. It's not his answers at press conferences. He's not an offensive coordinator. He's not a defensive coordinator. Special teams guy. Like, do you want a special teams guy as your head coach? Like, it's almost always a guy from offense or a guy from defense. It's very rare it's a guy that, like, can't take over either part of it. Not that it's impossible. It's just very rare, right? And I think that's also a big part of why Rich Bisaccia maybe never got a head coaching job before, is he never wowed as an OC or a DC. Move on. Jim Harbaugh. So this is, again, still kind of a pipe dream. There's a lot of smoke. I don't know if there's enough fire. No interview scheduled. But with Harbaugh, I mean, he's obviously got experience winning at the college level, experience winning at the pro level. He's that rock star that we're all rumored that Mark Davis is going to get. Big name, right? Brothers in the NFL. But my question would be this. Can you guarantee that Vic Fangio comes with you? Because Vic Fangio is going to be the most highest sought after defensive coordinator now that he's been fired from the Broncos. He's there's a good chance he'll be the highest paid coordinator in NFL football. Really good chance, because he's proved it. His defenses have been shut down everybody no matter where he goes. And him and Harbaugh go way back. And I'm wondering, like, getting Harbaugh for Fangio maybe by itself a good enough reason to hire Jim Harbaugh, let alone Jim Harbaugh's success at multiple levels and those khakis.
Oh, yeah, definitely the khakis. I mean, it's definitely something that needs to be asked. I mean, that's a question you should ask all the guys is,
yeah,
you know, what are you going to build? Like, what? Because the thing is look.
I'd argue almost half of a head coach's success.
More than half.
Is who are your offensive and defensive coordinators and the rest of your coaches?
Not even that. Yeah, like it's not just offensive coordinators. It's what's your staff going to look like?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what does the majority of your instruction is your hands-on instruction. Because you're going to lay out the schematics of it, but who's going to really implement the day-to-day, you know, nuts and bolts of your game plan as far as how you want it to be structured, how you want it to be laid out, is going to be your position coaches. Mm-hmm. So what kind of staff are you going to put together and where are you going to pull them from? And that's going to be, you know,
very important. That's such a big question for Bisaccia, because he's not a hands, like John Gruden, the offensive coordinator, was just like there to hold a clipboard. Right. Like Olsen was just there as an offensive coordinator just to like be Gruden's assistant. Right. It's not Bisaccia. Bisaccia is going to need coordinators like that. Right. And I think with Harbaugh, I mean, no matter where Fangio goes, he better be 100% in charge of that defense. He's proven that he's that big of a baller there. Gerard Mayo, he was interviewed Tuesday. He is currently the Pats defensive coordinator, was a linebacker for the Patriots for a while. Really young guy, like mid-30s, and he's already being considered by a couple teams as a potential head coach. So my question would be, why are you responsible for the Patriots' defensive success? Because we all know Bill Belichick is very similar to how Gruden is with the offense, Bill Belichick is with the defense. Bill Belichick is hands-on with that defense, and he's, you know, defensive background. When he was under Parcells, that Giants defense was amazing. That was all Belichick. And there's a good possibility that Gerard's the, like, number three guy with the defense. It might be Belichick's son that might supersede him as well. Like, I don't know what's going on in that facility. Like, he could literally be the number three guy running that defense. So Mark Davis has to ask him. It's like, okay, like, yeah, you're technically defensive coordinator for this really good defense. Prove to me that it was you.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the question everyone wants to know. I mean, they had a great defense before he was even there. Mm-hmm. So I think in that respect, he has to pull the Mike Tomlin and just wow him with his leadership and wow him with his intangibles, because it's not going to be his X's and O's as far as defensively, because, I mean, it's Belichick. Belichick's the defensive coordinator there.
He could also, but so I maybe like his, the way he would convince it is like, all right, I can't take credit for the Belichick's defense, but I can replicate it. I know the way he thinks. I know the way he works. I know how the defense is run. I played linebacker for him. I was defensive coordinator for him. Like that, I think that would be his answer is, I'm not going to try to take credit for Belichick, but I can replicate it. And so many other teams have tried to replicate the Patriot way and just haven't been able to do it. So he's got an uphill battle to me in convincing Mark Davis he's the guy. D'Amico Ryans, not interviewed yet, likely not until the, you know, won't be until the playoffs are over. He's got the NFC title game coming up. He has been tied to the Vikings. He's already been interviewed by the Vikings. My question would be, if I'm Mark Davis, to D'Amico Ryans, how can you convince me you didn't just take over for an already great defense? Because it's only his first year, defensive coordinator.
Well, yeah, I mean, the defense, again, it's very similar to Gerard Mayo, except the defensive coordinator is not there anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of the same cast of characters, the same, they're running the same exact scheme. And I think even the same exact calls. So what is he doing except not screwing it up? Again, does he have the leadership qualities? Is he going to pull a Mike Tomlin and a John Harbaugh coming in there and have those traits? Could he have that? Yes, he very well could. And along those same lines, those were two young position style. I mean, John Harbaugh was a special teams coordinator when he was hired as head coach. But they came in there and they showed those traits. Am I opposed to any of these guys getting the job? No, I'm not, because they had to have knocked the socks off to go above any of these other guys. So I don't think that his defensive coordinator experience is going to put him above anyone else at this point. I think it's going to be more so the leadership qualities that he shows and just the conviction in his answers.
I also get a very big, like, this sounds like a repeat of Paul Gunther a little bit. Like, remember Paul Gunther took over for an already really good defense and then got the credit for it and then turned out to be, like, as we all learned, a shit defensive coordinator. Ay. This would kind of like, and it's not fair to Ryan's, like, it's definitely not fair to him to compare him, but it just has that same feel. Like, Ryan just took over for an already good defense, gets the credit for it, gets a gig, and then we realize he sucks. That's how bad Gunther is. He's poisoned me to people that aren't even around him. That's how bad his poison spreads.
Come on, man.
Like a fart that just like takes over multiple floors. Last one, Todd Bowles. He'll be interviewed on Thursday, maybe today, maybe yesterday, depending on when you're listening. He's also been interviewed by the Vikings. And my question to him would be like, can you get this squad to play your style of defense? Because a Bowles style difference is almost exactly opposite of Gus Bradley. Gus Bradley blitzes less than any other squad. Todd Bowles blitzes more than almost any other squad. Gus Bradley is take away the deep play, play conservative, and keep everything in front of you. Bowles is attack, attack, attack. You know, instead of like making the tackle on a quick slant, go for the ball and go for the pick. Instead of, you know, just a good steady pass rush, it's like blitz everybody and get his ass. Like he's like a high risk, high reward guy. I don't know if you can turn a squad of guys and have them do a complete 180 and change the style of defense. Convince me, Todd, that this defense can do this 180 that you're going to have them do.
Yeah, that's a good question, man. And it's not an easy defense to coach. It's not an easy defense to have. It's not a defense that's conducive to having a lot of young players, which is what we have. Mm-hmm. It's a very dynamic defense. You need a lot of dynamic players, but we just happen to have dynamic players on our defense. I think that the players that we have can handle it if you coach them up, and it's going to take a lot of discipline and a lot of hard coaching. are some of the players that we have not going to fit in that style of defense? Yeah, unfortunately. Unfortunately, yeah. Casey Hayward is one. I think that wouldn't fit in a Todd Bowles defense. We'll just have to see. I mean, I wouldn't, if I'm a Todd Bowles, I would try to talk up my ability and try to parallel players. Like when I got to the Bucks, this player was like this player. Look, he's flourishing in this system. Mm-hmm. I saw this player like this guy. Look how we're using him. I would parallel as many players as I could with the Raiders, who you have over in Tampa, and how they're flourishing in that system, because that defense is pretty damn good.
So those are the five coaches. Those are the five questions we'd ask. And what I'm worried about is it just going to be Mark Davis just like picking somebody because they order the same thing at Hooters. It just feels like that's what Mark Davis would do. You know, like the first guy to like kiss his ass just right. Like, all right, let's say at the same time, our favorite movie. And they like wait for Davis to say like Rocky Three. Oh, my God. Oh, what are the odds? Wow. That's so crazy. Just like this pure like kiss up. And I think he'll buy it. That's what I'm worried about.
Oh, boy. Don't say that, man. You're making me nervous. You're making me really nervous right now.
You know Mark Davis as well as as well as I do. Not well, just kind of what we've seen. Maybe he's learned his lesson, right? Maybe he learned the lesson through John Gruden, and he's seeing the errors. Because everyone looks at him as Mark Davis as like some goober. Oh, it's just.
I never said that.
I didn't say you did. I'm just saying so many people do. It's like, oh, the haircut and the weird outfits, and he just got the job because he got the team because his dad did. But it's like, dude, he's done some pretty good. He did some pretty smart stuff, like getting $750 million for the stadium, moving the team, like. Those were no small feats, right? So he's like, he's capable of some things. Now, is he capable of not falling in love with the wrong coach? Is the next question. So that's the question of the day. Who should be the Raiders' next head coach? Leave it in the comments section below. I've been banging the drum of how great this rookie team has been. And it's not, it's no rocket science decision, right? It's not a crazy observation with just how good this rookie class has been. I think just because Alex Leatherwood's been so bad that he's given everyone a bad rap.
Yeah, right.
But it's just not true. I mean, this rookie class has been great. And they've been forced to play a lot more than most rookie classes because of injuries or guys not playing well or, high-priced free agents that we brought in. They got taken over. But this rookie class is something really special, and it's ironic because it's the rookie class that Mike Mayock got fired after doing, and he getting fired after the best class he ever drafted, which is very ironic, but it's the reality of the situation. So let's go over our rookies, how they performed rounds 1 through 7, and we'll just go through them and grade them all. First one, most disappointing one of all, Alex Leatherwood.
All right, so Alex Leatherwood, she's a D minus grade, mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of generous.
So he passed. It's like Tommy Boy, I got a D plus. I passed. A lot of guys go to college for 7 years. Yeah, they're called doctors. They're not just giving away D pluses these days.
Just handing them out like hoecakes. All right, so D minus grade. Look, I wasn't thrilled from the freaking day one. You can go back to our post-draft freaking episode. I wasn't thrilled about this fucking thing. Like, I never wanted this dude. I just didn't like him.
I didn't like his face.
I didn't like his face. I didn't like his breath. None of that shit. D minus is very, very optimistic with me. We're a passing league, all right? He was slightly above average in run blocking. That's the best thing that we can say about you is in one statistic, you were slightly above average. That's the best thing we can say about your ass.
In a position we didn't draft you to be in.
Yes, in a position that you were not drafted. So let's take a look at this. You were moved to right guard because you stink. That's why you were right guard. Get it? Right guard. You see what I did there?
We were going to switch you to Mitchum, but instead we switched you to right guard.
But I'm a Mitchum man myself. All right. I use the sandalwood stuff that I got. It's really good. It's sandalwood? Good. It's like a sandalwood scent. It's masculine. So we moved to right guard in week six. He still allowed 10 more pressures than any other guard, even though he was moved there in week six. So, okay, he was moved there in week six. He still allowed 10 more pressures than any other guard.
It's like how Derrick Henry still led the league in rushing yards like 3 weeks until after, like, he got put on the IR.
No, it was like until like 4 or 5 weeks after, he still led the league. No, he led all guards by like 10 more by 10 in pressures, and he didn't play the first 6 weeks at guard, which is 67. He allowed 67 pressures and he didn't even play the first 6 weeks at guard. Okay. He allowed the second most sacks at guard, 8, and PFF graded him the fourth worst pass blocking efficiency rate. Fourth worst.
Yeah.
PFF rated him slightly above average run blocking efficiency, 64.4.
That's not even counting his penalties. Penalty after penalty. He also was all-star penalty.
He was the most pre-snap penalties in the NFL, also the most pre-snap penalties of offensive linemen, and the most penalties overall of offensive linemen. So you put all that together, and look, he just didn't have a good season. I can understand it like this. If you're you know, tough. You get beat a lot or whatever, but at least you don't make penalties, right? Or, you know, you don't get beat a lot, but you don't. Oh man, I make a lot of mental mistakes, but physically I got it. Or physically, you know what? I make mistakes, but mentally I got. But no, you're making physical mistakes and mental mistakes. What the fuck? What are you there? What are you there for?
The good news for Leatherwood is when you're a first rounder, you're going to get second, third, fourth, fifth chances, right?
Yeah, you asked me a question about Nick Martin. Like, is Nick Martin that bad that he didn't play? I'm like, no. Nick Martin, I think, would have played better at guard, but Leatherwood was a first rounder, and you kind of have to keep him out there.
You've invested so much in him. It's like, let's see if he can figure it out, right? Like, you give first rounders every benefit of the doubt. Right, like you have to fail multiple times to get pulled out. So we're hoping, right? It's not time, you know. They're not going to give up on him next season. He's going to get another shot, whether at guard or tackle is yet to be seen. He's going to get a lot of attention because he's a first rounder. The pressure's going to be on him because he's a first rounder.
Yeah,
here's hoping he can get it figured out. Right? I mean, Colt Miller. We wasn't that long ago, but everyone was, you know, super low on Colt Miller for his rookie year, albeit he had injuries.
He
was bad. He wasn't this bad, and was injuries holding him back. So we'll see. He's got
first rounders are like me. Don't pull out.
I got a strong pull out game. So I only got one kid. Second round pick, Trevon Moehrig, safety. He played almost every single defensive snap this season.
This is how impressive Trevon Moehrig was this year. We all thought, okay, you know what? He's solid back there, whatever. Let me throw a couple of stats at you guys, okay? He played all but 6 defensive snaps this year. All right? If that's not impressive enough, he was PFF's number 6th ranked defensive rookie overall, regardless of position. Number 6, okay? He was the number 2 ranked rookie coverage grade in PFF. So the second ranked coverage grade rookie, when
spit it out.
I'm trying to work.
You're so impressed with him that he's knocked you over.
When Trevon Merrick's man that he was covering was thrown to for the entire season, This is the stark contrast between Trevon Merrick and Jonathan Abram. This is like a season to a game. When Trevon Merrick's man was thrown to for an entire season, Trevon Merrick gave up 9 receptions for 141 yards for the season. Mm-hmm. That's a game for Jonathan Abram. That was for the entire not when Trevon Merrick was playing center field and kind of drifted off and tried to help. This is when Trevon Merrick was on a guy and he was thrown to. He gave up 9 catches for 141 yards for the entire year. That's elite level. That's excellent. All right.
As a rookie. Yeah. Round 3, Malcolm Kuntz got started late, right?
Well, hang on. Let me just wrap up a bow. The reason why he didn't get an A is he dropped 3 easy interceptions. Yeah. One of them was a game sealing win interception against Washington.
He needs to get on the jugs machine with Hunter Renfrow,
yeah. But yeah, other than that, he would have got an A, but he got a B+. Sorry, Malcolm Kuntz.
Not a lot of playing time because his position wasn't as demanded and needed like Leatherwood and Morig, but still played solid. You didn't hear a lot of terrible mistakes out of him when he played, which as a rookie, that was, I think, the best thing about Trevon Merrick. It's like you rarely heard his name because people didn't score on him. People didn't catch passes on him. He wasn't doing anything generally that spectacular. Dropping interceptions, another reason why I didn't hear his name that much. But he rarely screwed up, which was huge for a rookie. Kuntz is kind of along that lines too.
Yeah, Malcolm Kuntz got a C+ grade, partially because he wasn't really out there that much. But let's break down when he actually did play. So he played 48 defensive snaps, okay? So 25 of those snaps were pass plays. So he had 25 pass rushes, okay? So out of those 25 pass rushes, he had 4 pressures and 2 sacks. So 25 pass rushes and 2 sacks. That's like, if you stretch that out over like a game, he's averaging like 2 sacks a game. Mm. Okay, that's pretty fucking good. Even if you're like a situational pass rusher, that's like a sack and a half a game. If you put someone in on situational like third downs or pass obvious like second and longs, like that's like a sack and a half a game average. So
next season you rotate him in there with Yannick Ngakoue, exactly. Right? Like Yannick's like taking a lot of snaps off. It's like, all right, let's keep you fresh, get Kuntz some reps, right? That's re-sign Yannick, our guy.
Yeah, that's elite level percentage wise. Mm-hmm. So although you didn't see a lot of snaps out of this guy, his percentage is like 2 sacks out of only 25 dropbacks. That's fucking elite level. Okay, now let's see if we can stretch that out. It's a very small sample size. Let's see if we can stretch that out over a larger sample size. But that small snapshot shows a lot of good. Can come from this. Now, here's the issue. We've seen Max Crosby greatly improve his run defense, but look at Malcolm Kuntz. Now, you can do the math wizards, 48 total snaps, 25 dropbacks, that leaves what? 23 run plays, right? Out of 23 run plays, he had 1 tackle. That's not very good, okay? So that needs to improve, but he's a young kid. He was pretty much told, go get the quarterback when he's out there. So hopefully that improves. Max did improve in that in his third year. So let's hopefully that does improve with Malcolm Kuntz moving forward. But a very small sample size. He didn't get nicked up earlier in the year. Very kind of not, I wouldn't say up and down, but pretty down, not very up against the run, which will show some improvement moving forward. But the C+ there for Malcolm Kuntz.
Next up, Divine Diablo played absolutely fantastic as kind of an outside linebacker, not feet, hand in the dirt type of end type of guy, mostly outside linebacker.
The Willie.
He took a $15 million linebacker and turned him into a special teams player.
Put him right? in.
Corey Littleton's job, and he was gone. Divine Diablo, again, similar to Kuntz, didn't get the start right away, came in like kind of past halfway through the season. But immediately made his mark when he did.
Yeah. So Malcolm Kuntz was the number 2 rookie linebacker per PFF. That's amazing. Now, he would have been number one if he didn't get hurt. He missed a lot of training camp, and most of the he only played one preseason game. He took over the starting spot for the last five games over Corey Littleton.
Well, Micah Parsons was the number one rookie linebacker. Do they count him as an end or a linebacker?
I think they counted him as an end.
Okay. That makes sense.
An edge player, yeah.
Because Micah Parsons was the best rookie, whatever position.
He was, they play a 3-4, so he was basically an edge, an end.
Yeah.
So in his last five games, he started off a little shaky against the pass. In his last five games, Divine Diablo averaged just 24 receiving yards. That's pretty fucking good.
Not bad.
Had he not gotten hurt earlier in the year, he would have gotten an A as a grade. He played amazing. He was a steadying influence. He didn't let a lot of the big time tight ends in the league shake him. He was covering backs. He was covering tight ends. He was covering wide receivers coming across the middle. The game wasn't big for him. He was there. He was a leader. He was calling people out. I don't have no problem with anything that he said.
Moving on, another defensive player. Noticing a theme here. Defense. Tyree Gillespie didn't play a lot. Injured. Didn't play till the very end, till later on the season. Filled in when he had to. But again, you never really heard of him making drastic errors all that often, which for a rookie is a pretty good accomplishment.
Yeah, Terry Gillespie got an incomplete. He only played 13 defensive snaps, injured most of the year. I mean, just unfortunate little nagging injuries. He had a groin injury. He had an abdominal injury. Again, 13 defensive snaps. But he did receive almost a 73 PFF special teams grade, so he did contribute a lot in special teams. Hopefully we get to see a lot of more of him at safety in the years moving forward.
Hoping that it's not a red flag, these injury issues that will continue.
Yeah, that groin and abdominal injury were kind of related. So hopefully that's just a kind of a one-time thing that we don't have to see going forward.
Groin bones connected to your abdominal bone. Nate Hobbs, this was the big breakout rookie star for the Raiders this year. Played absolutely off the wall. He was playing great. He wasn't like the surprise late. He was the surprise immediately. In preseason, you're like, oh shit, this guy can ball. Slot receiver that can tackle, that can cover, good vision, good locker room guy. I mean, this was one of the best value picks that Mike Mayock, like, he's right up there, potentially, right? Just his rookie season, but right up there with like Hunter Renfro, Max Crosby, Nate Hobbs is like late round gems, that like potential all-star dude.
Yeah, Nate Hobbs received an A. He was the number four overall ranked rookie defender per PFF. Led all first-year cornerbacks by over 10 grade points. Mm. So he was by far the best corner in the entire rookie class. Mm. Like head and above, the best rookie corner. So we got by far the best corner in the entire draft.
Yep.
So good job on us. And we got him in the fifth motherfucking round. Job for us. He finished. No, listen to this. He finished in the top 10 among all corners. All corners, rookie or not, with 23 defensive stops and allowed just one touchdown in coverage all year. That's it. So he can blitz and he can tackle. He's a tough cover. He was a top 10 corner. So we have a top 10 corner in the entire league. We have a top 10 rookie. The top rookie corner. He's a top 10 corner. We have a centerpiece of a defense on our team. Let's keep him under control. Let's put a governor on his car so he can't go that fast. Jesus. Let's just hopefully he can keep his head on straight.
Yeah, let's pay off the bouncers at Dre's to like not let him go. Like as soon as he shows up, it is like the bat signal goes off to somebody at the Raiders facility.
Something.
Tell them to get his act together. And then finally, holding up at the very end, Jimmy Morrissey. When you draft that late, you often, you know, sometimes they don't make the squad. He got cut. Houston picked him up. Nothing there for Morrissey.
Yeah.
So that's our rookie class. Alex Leatherwood, Trevon Moehrig, Malcolm Kuntz, Divine Diablo, Tyree Gillespie, Nate Hobbs, Jimmy Morrissey. Sweet names. Just good names. You know, like you want to like hate Leatherwood because he played so bad, but Alex good Leatherwood, names. Good name. Divine good name. Diablo?
Diablo.
That sounds like a boss in a video game you have to fight.
Divine Comedy. Divine Diablo.
Trevon Moehrig, good one. Malcolm Kuntz.
Kuntz, yeah.
This sounds like the names of a bunch of guys that are going to be in a Nate high school
Hobbs.
Movie.
Calvin yeah. Hobbs.
Good like names. Name. Good fucking names. Another really cool name. A little alliteration. Bruce Buffer.
Bruce motherfucker.
Veteran voice of the Octagon and calling the Raider home games.
Yeah.
Joins us next. Here's
your three-time world champion, Las Vegas Raiders! It's time!
Joining us now, you've seen him over the years, of course, in the Octagon, calling the fights coming out, the UFC announcer, and now he's part of the Raider family. He intros every single home game in the Raiders. Bruce Buffer, the Buff Man on the Autumn Windbags. How you doing, Bruce?
Yeah. Hey, I'm doing great, guys. RJ, long time. We've known each other. Great to see you. Juan, we've been around the block a couple times. Great to see you too, my friend.
Yeah, man.
Bruce, that very first Monday Night Football game of the season, Baltimore Ravens in town. I had no clue that you were doing the announcing. I thought I had my finger on the pulse of all your gigs. I had no clue. And I just go, and it's like, I start hearing the announcing, like, oh, that kind of sounds like Buffer. And you keep going, like, oh, that's cool. They got Bruce Buffer to, like, record an intro. And then she's like, oh, Bruce Buffer's in there doing the intro. I mean, the energy between, like, you know, Aoki's doing the DJ.
Yeah, right,
you're
the song,
doing the announcing. How the director got it set up, like, right into the kickoff. I mean, talk about getting jacked for the first home Vegas game with fans. Like, you were such a big part of that.
Oh, thanks, RJ. I appreciate it. You know me, I'm a humble guy. I just do my job. But you know what? If I'm making excited and I'm fulfilling it, that just makes everything worthwhile. Thanks so much for your kind words. You know, when I came out at the Raider game, I've opened up and thrown out the first pitch and announced the Dodger game. Mm-hmm. I laced the plate, by the way, from the rubber. Okay. Okay. Well, I laced the plate. I didn't pull a 50 cent. I got it. I've done hockey, or I didn't pull a Conor McGregor. I've done hockey, I've done, you know, baseball, I've done, you know, football, basketball, all that stuff. But I got to tell you, walking out of the Raider game with 70,000+ people, and as soon as I walked out and they started seeing me and going crazy, it's like, I couldn't even believe anybody even recognized me, I'll be honest with you. So I walk out, I do my thing, and you know me, I'm always going to give every bit of emotion I got. That was so much fun, and then the response was so strong, and they said they had sound clips of the players on the field, many of them saying, oh my God, it's Bruce Buffer. Now we really got to win this effing game, you know? And it's like, if I can instill that into a fighter, a football player, or a basketball, whatever, then I'm doing my job. And then now I did all the home games. The best one I did was the last one, which was an amazing game.
Oh my God, they were going wild.
Yeah.
Oh my God. The games this year have just been unbelievable. The Kansas City game last weekend was the greatest game I think I've ever seen. But it's such an honor being with the Raiders. And then when the fact they made the playoffs, teams are very superstitious, sure. Right? So if they didn't make the playoffs, I might not have been called back for next year. But I've gotten the word that I'm on the team.
Nice.
The NFL contacted me after that very first game. And their key entertainment people were at the game. And they talked to me, and I'll make the announcement now. I kind of got to keep it a secret, but I don't mind saying it. But I'm going to be announcing the Pro Bowl.
Hey,
awesome.
Yeah,
let's bring the heat.
I'm bringing the heat. And wait till you see the production they have for the opening of the Pro Bowl with me. It's awesome. But you know where I really want to be.
The Super Bowl, right? It's in LA where you live, right?
I don't want to say anything before it happens. Let me just say there's a sliver of a chance.
Okay.
But let me tell you that. You will see me. I'm going to predict that I will be out at the Super Bowl in the next two or three seasons.
Damn. Beautiful.
I've had the Super Bowl commercial, but I haven't been on the Super Bowl, right? But here's what I would love to do. I would love my brother and I to do it together.
Yeah.
Right? Like dueling?
Like One team, one game, boom, boom, mm-hmm. boom, dueling. Oh,
wow, that'd be great.
Well, I mean, not dueling, you know, I'm going to blow him out of the water. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, shit. don't kid.
Shots fired early.
That's my passion, Michael. No, I was kidding. No, it's all good. He's the greatest of all time. Like somebody said, Michael's like a fine bottle of Bordeaux, and I'm like a shot of Puncher's Chance.
Puncher's Chance.
There it is.
Fine, Bruce Buffer bourbon.
Hey, what time is it? 4:40, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I just came out with my 12 year version,
uh-huh.
right? Called D12. We call it the distance. Can you see that?
I get it.
Get it?
I get it. A little play distance. On words there. Uh huh.
We only had 2,000 cases, which we sold out in 3 weeks. Is that well, we nice. Now we've won 6 gold medals, 3 for taste, 3 for design of the bottle, and the Bourbon Spectator called us the finest sipping bourbon amongst 4 others. At the $30 range in America today. Mm-hmm. So we're now considered one of the fastest selling, but we are the highest rated craft distilled bourbon in America. I am so proud of this, guys.
Wow.
Nice.
So if I may.
That's awesome.
Right now, please. It's 4:40.
I'm going to go time.
I'm toasting the boys.
That's the best part about that Puncher's Chance bourbon is you don't have to wait till 5 o'clock. You can drink it whenever.
It's Puncher's Chance. So there's for your viewers. You can get it. Go to puncherchance.com or whatever. It's in Vegas, in California, Costco, BevMo, Safeway, Albertson, you name it. It's cranking. I'm just going to show Conor McGregor how to do it the proper way.
Okay.
There we go. Get in the windbags.
Nice. Little taste.
But kudos to Conor and his company. They did a great job.
Yeah. Yeah. He's as if he didn't make enough money before. He has to take all the money now getting in the liquor biz.
Bruce, I want to know what goes into the coat selection. Because that is like top shelf. We talk about liquor. That the coat selection is top shelf.
I will tell you, first I forgot to say cheers, gentlemen. I'm sorry.
Salud.
All the best to you in 2022.
You too, buddy.
Likewise.
You know, I started getting I've always dressed sharp because I always tell everybody when announcers write me, and I announce every one of them, you know, I try to help them. The biggest thing I tell announcers is don't copy, okay? Learn from others, but if you want to be known for what you do, be original. So take it all, juxtapose it, but create your own style. My brother, Michael Buffer, legendary, came out. He created that whole image with his James Bond image in the clothes. I'm like Lululemon. I'm a surfer, you know, bathing suit by day, but I love tuxedos. I love fine suits. So I used to be with David August, who makes the suits for a lot of UFC guys, Stallone and others. He did a great job. But I met these incredible tailors called My King and Bay. If you go on Instagram or the web, just go to @MyKingandBay. Mm-hmm. And they're out of Toronto. They'll make and ship everywhere in the United States. They are amazing. So what they do is we get together, and it's been about 5 or 6 years now. And my closet is, I've got about 60, 80 of, you know, jackets and tuxedos back there. when I wear it, I put it to the back of the row. So it works its way forward. You know, maybe you'll see me wear it twice in a year at best. So anyway, we sit down and we get raw jacquard silk, which is very hard to get some of these patterns. So they only can get enough to make one jacket. So every jacket I wear is one of a kind. And inside is all special, labeling the UFC 270 or whatever, and who's fighting, and a great interior. And when we can make a second jacket, we've auctioned off like 3 or 4 times, and they've sold for $8,000 to $10,000. You know, it's crazy. So I'm a big collector of memorabilia, sports, guns and artifacts, antique weaponry, and movie posters. Like the poster behind me is the original Dr. No. I love collectibles, and I know how to do well investment wise in collectibles. So I know how to create a collectible market. So my cards I hold in my hand, I've only auctioned off about 13 shows worth. They've sold for as much as $4,200 for one card. On the average, they sell about 200. The jackets, I'm not going to plan on selling them. I'm holding on to them. There's a lot that can be done with them. And I just love them. I walk in the closet and I'll look at all these jackets, and it's like, it brings back a memory of each show. It's unreal. So to answer your question, Juan, we sit down and we go through different designs. Like that design I wore last weekend, that gold design was specifically made. I mean, it was the new year. It was the first pay-per-view of the year. And I thought it was a bang-up job with that jacket. And it was just so beautifully comfortable. So they'll make them. You'll see me wear a new jacket pretty much for every pay-per-view this year. I'll probably have about 20 new jackets or complete tuxedo outfits over the year. Mm-hmm. And that's it. So we sit back and, you know, we choose. And it's funny is I never consider myself like a fashionista. and the UK Sun, and they called me the fashionista, and I made like the Star and the New York Times. And I got to tell you guys, I sit back and I laugh my ass off at this. Okay. It cracks me up, but if that's what you want to call me, so be it, whatever.
Soto, if you, I don't know if you're still in the same place, Buffer. This was over 10 years ago when we came over with Tap Out Magazine.
Oh, at the beach.
Yeah. At the beach. Yeah. At South Bay. There's this whole upstairs. This is office, collectibles, and every single toy, video game, punching bag, like all the stuff that they've licensed. It is like, it's like a fandom like Disneyland up there slash museum. Like all these antique guns, all the toys he's done. It was just like this whole, like you could charge admission just to like tour the top that top floor of your office.
Nice.
Hey, you know what? It's something to talk about when friends come over, that first or second date comes over. It gives you a lot of conversation, you know, and it's ongoing. I walk through thank you so much, RJ. I walk through my house and I never get tired, you know, because of all the artwork and everything. But to answer your question, RJ, no, I sold and moved to my dream home up by the beach nearby in Playa del Rey. I don't want to give any addresses away or anything like that.
Yeah, what's the exact address, please?
Well, you know what? On the internet, whatever. You don't even want to try to break into my house, bro. You're either going to be shot through the head or you're going to wind up losing a couple limbs, okay? It's just... even if I'm out of town, there's security taking care of my house. Trust me.
Perfect. I bet with all the stuff you got in there. Yeah. I just love... like, it was such a no-brainer for the Raiders and you to be a thing. Like obviously, like the announcing and the energy that you bring to an event is, you know, it's unique and one of a kind, but it's so like the Raiders, they're moving to Las Vegas and they want to be Las Vegas, right? They want to be embraced by the community. They want to be Las Vegas. And what sporting franchise is more Las Vegas than the UFC? And of course the UFC would love to be tied into NFL's the biggest sport in America, right? Like Super Bowl is the biggest thing in America. Who doesn't want to be tied into that? So it's like you, UFC, Vegas, Raiders, like it was such a perfect marriage all the way around for everybody.
I agree with you. And you know, when I do things in life, there's what they call a double-edged sword of promotion. Okay. So when I walk out at the Raider game, even though it does not say, you know, Bruce Buffer, UFC Octagon announcer, I'm happy to say that because of being one of the top five recognizable faces of the UFC, because of the consistency of all the shows I do and everything, that when I walk out from a business standpoint, because you know I'm a marketer and a brander first and foremost, that's $1 million commercial for the UFC, you know, because they think about it. The eyeballs. And it's very exciting for me to do that. Dana was at that game at the very first game, and you know, he didn't know I was going to be out there either. And I wanted to just surprise everybody, you know, and let them know.
Was that the goal, to keep it completely under wraps until it was announced? Yeah,
that was their goal. They actually flew me in, you know, they kept me under the radar. When they walked me up there, you know, when I had to go through the audience a little bit, you know, people were hemming and hawing, you know, what's going to happen. And then it all just blew up. They wanted to keep a secret. I couldn't say anything about it. And they're so cool. Great organization to work with. And also, before the season started, that was the highest, most sought after ticket in the NFL.
Yeah.
Right. Not that it's not, still is. And Allegiant Stadium is incredible. I like it better than I like SoFi. You know, SoFi is incredible too. Don't get me wrong. Except for the parking in and out is an absolute
horrific.
Not Allegiant, you know, the way it all works there. And then they go in there in the car, you know, early, a couple hours before the game, and you see the tailgaters. And come on, is there any more serious tailgaters than the Raider fans?
Nope.
It's crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But just to be behind the scenes, and I'm a kid in a candy store. It's just so much fun. You know, I'll always be the first one to cash the paycheck on a Monday at the bank, but I'm not always about the money. Of course I am, but I'm not. You know, that kind of experience is priceless. It's priceless. So I hold it close to my heart. And I'm from Philadelphia. Obviously, I'm an Eagles fan forever. But, you know, I was rooting for the Raiders like crazy. Crazy.
Especially after all the stuff they went through this year. It's kind of hard to root against them, you know?
You know, people wondered and people said, you know, if we move the team to Vegas, is it going to have effect on some of the players?
Jeez.
Maybe it did, but let's just say when you're racing down Rainbow Boulevard, you know, at 160 miles an hour, you're a friggin' idiot. I'm sorry. Horrific.
That's what we said on our show.
Yeah. And your Raider, I'm sorry. It's just wrong. It's wrong.
That's not a straight shot either.
No.
You're driving by homes.
I mean, overnight, it just goes to show you how in 1 second your life can change and a young child died. I mean, come on.
God, man.
It's just so tragic.
Young. It's so stupid.
So tragic. Yeah.
It sucked. So how did the Raiders gig come to be? Was it just
that's an interesting story.
Well, I'm all ears.
All right. Well, when they were back in where they were, you know, in you know, previously, they were playing my voice saying it's time, and I got a report of it. Now my job as manager, my brother, the legendary Michael Buffer, and his famous phrase, "Let's get ready to rumble," which we trademarked together, and you know the story behind that. I deal with violations all the time. And I have to go in and take care of them because when you have a trademark, if you don't protect it, the government can take it away from you. Mm-hmm. You know, we actually, Infinity Broadcasting tried to sue us to free up Let's Get Ready to Rumble as public domain one time. Mm-hmm. And because I went after Don Imus, the DJ, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. The, you know, the host, the radio host. And that's another story I'll tell you later. I wrote about it in my book, It's Time. But I got a lawsuit that morning, you know, that they were going to free it up. I don't have that kind of, I mean, I can handle money, but I don't have that kind of money to fight Infinity Broadcast. They'll keep me in court for millions of dollars, right?
They got floors of lawyers.
But I had a trademark so tight, so everything, and screw their floor lawyers because they're out there trying to, you know, pressure me. Sorry, it's a fight at this point, and I love to fight, and I'll fight you. And I went in that afternoon, and I had my attorney sue him back. Mm-hmm. And we settled within a week with us winning, right?
Nice.
Sometimes David has to face Goliath. It's just the way it is. So what happened is that the Raiders, who I've always loved, I've always been a Raider fan to a degree because I love their whole history. And John Madden, I think, is my fave of all times. So they were playing, and I just called them up. I said, guys, this is a trademark. Okay, you can't do this. This is the way I used to do it in the early days, not even having the attorney take care of it. So we came to a small little tiny settlement so they could license. It was really a license to use it the rest of the season. And they said, well, listen, when we get to Vegas, we really want you to work with us. So that was 2 years before they got to Vegas. And then before the season happened back in July or June, I wrote them and I said, hey guys, I'm all on board. You know, I mean, I could go back and do the Eagles. I could go do somebody else, but I think, or the Rams, you know, down the street from my house here. I said, but I think I want to be with you. You mentioned it. Let's do this. And it was just immediate exception. You know, they were like, that's what we plan to do. We were going to call you anyway. And boom, that's how it all got solidified. So we came to an agreement on all the deal points and all, which is normal in a contract. And here we are. Happy, happy.
Sure. So with the Super Bowl coming to Allegiant Stadium in 2024, right? I feel like that's the goal. Right, I know you said Super Bowl is the goal, but like Allegiant Stadium, it's too perfect, right? It's the home where you call it. That's gotta be the easy sell, right?
I've been told, and again, never count your eggs before they hatch. Okay, it's been mentioned, but listen. You know me, RJ. I make things happen. I don't wait for it to happen. I'll be in that. I want to be in that Super Bowl before 2024. And if I got to wait till 2024, so be it. Great. Mm-hmm. You know, the most exciting things in the world are the impending events. Yeah. I can wait.
Who do you negotiate with to do that? Is it like you're just hitting up Roger Goodell himself? Is there like a marketing person? Like
The Raiders take care, and the Raiders are in control of all their home games. Okay. Yeah. So even if the Super Bowl is at Allegiant, the Raiders can't make that call. The people at the NFL that I deal with who are in the entertainment of, you know, department or division or whatever it is, they're really, really cool. And they're really nice. And I've created a relationship with them. And there's a saying in Hollywood where if it's not their idea, it's not going to happen. I have no ego here. It's not about being my idea. I'm a mercenary. You point, I shoot. I'm a media mercenary. So they know I want to be there. We've talked about it and they like the idea. So let them tell me. And whatever kind of nudging and budging I can do, I'll do.
You don't have to give, you know, direct numbers, but just like, I'm kind of curious, like fee wise, a Raider game compared to a UFC, is it comparable? Is it, cause you do, you know, 20, 25 UFC.
Jesus, RJ.
You can say about a man's money. Honest. I'm just curious because you got 70,000 fans, right? There's only 8 home games. There was 9 this year, but generally only 8 home games a season. I imagine they got, you know, Bruce's time ain't cheap, Soto. You know what I'm saying? Bruce's time ain't cheap. You're paying for quality here.
I mean, I understand, but Jesus.
I don't mind answering, but let me answer it this way because I never talk financial dollars unless they're publicized and I can't avoid it. So once your chance sells for $500 million or more, it'll be publicized, okay? But in this respect, let me just say this, guys. I get paid very well for what I do. And I have minimum fees when I do motivational speeches or appearances, which actually my minimum is actually more than I make in the UFC. But I get paid very, very well by UFC. And I get paid very well by the Raiders. I will just say that it's not as much as the UFC, but there's a reason why. Okay, when you're in business and the exposure that the Raider game gives me, my passion and love of working with the Raider organization is included in this decision, is that I'm paid very healthy. It's a ton of fun. It flourishes everything I'm doing in life and all the products I have coming out and keeping my image out there, the relevancy of the factor of PR and promotion. So even though it's less than what the UFC pays, but it's a very healthy paycheck, you have to be a fool to turn it down. And it falls into that that equation I told you of. It's really not about the money, okay? It's about the experience. It's about being part of a historic situation that benefits my brand and my my image as I grow and build my business in all the different areas internationally, because my products are being released in 40 countries around the world.
Yeah, right? Nice.
So with that being said, you want that kind of exposure. It's a free multi-million dollar commercial.
Well, and to that point, I mean, the fact that they're paying you is better than the Super Bowl halftime performers. Super Bowl halftime performers do it for free just for the exposure. So Bruce, you're getting the fee and you're getting the exposure. So like it's, you know, this isn't like, oh, you know, doing it for free or even getting paid a little bit. It's like you said, it's a $1 million commercial that you're getting paid to do.
This is what I do. I've been managing my brother's career for years. I mean, I negotiate, I manage, I work in front and behind the camera. I'm just not the talent that'll, you know, let everybody do their work. I mean, I watch over everything and go for the gold, but you got to make certain decisions. And there's a thing in business called a loss leader. If you don't get paid, the lost leader is still just as valuable as if you got paid. It's like when I spoke to the NFL and there's a chance to do the Super Bowl whenever it happens, I'm down the street. I'm like, they go, we don't have the same kind of budget the Raiders have with halftime with everything. I go, you know what? Just send me a car. Tell me what you want to pay me. Send me a car. Show me a dollar bill, tear it in half and pay me 50 cents. Okay. I'll still be there. Right. Nice. I hope they're not listening right now. Cause I might've just,
right. We can edit that out. Don't worry.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll take care of it in post.
Yeah, RJ asking about dollars. Like, you got to watch how you, watch who you're talking to here.
I like the answer, right? We're discussing lost leaders and stuff. I'm learning things.
This is the bare knuckle elevator champion here. You got to watch out.
See, this is Soto's segue. He was like death before you came on. He's like, can I ask him about the
first? I'm not deathly afraid, Bruce.
Yeah,
look.
He was pretty intimidated, Bruce. So I was like,
I'm not deathly afraid. Look,
nurse your way into it.
Bruce, we have mutual friends. I don't want to disrespect in any type of way, but there's someone out there. Let's just call him Schmank Schmrick.
Rhymes with Frank Trigg.
There's someone who, let's say, if you were to announce a fight that he may or may not be reffing in, may not want to look you in the eye, that there was an issue in an elevator. And I was like, I wouldn't want to ask you that question about money just in case we're ever in an elevator, because you are the heavyweight bare knuckle elevator champion. That's all I got to say.
Well, let me just say that, you know, in all the streets fights I've had and fights on the beach, you know, as a surfer and everything, I like fighting in close quarters. So I'd rather fight in an elevator so there's not too much room to move, because I like using my elbows when it comes down to, you know, getting things done. And all kidding aside, Frank and I are friends. We just worked together last weekend. Right? We're in the octagon together. And I think Kenny Florian put out a funny tweet. He goes, nice to see that, you know, the bloodbath didn't happen all over again. You know, when that situation happened and USC Folklore did that animated thing on it, and it was so true to fact, all that was through there. And let's face it, Frank was in there and they interviewed him. And, you know, what happened happened. I got to give credit to Dana White. Listen, when I get in a fight, I'll tell in the past, you know, it's my friends or my buddies, but I'm not going to, hey, I got in a fight, guess what I did? I'm not that kind of guy. Dana was telling everybody.
Freaking Dana stir the pot.
Two days after.
He's a fight promoter, right? He's trying to get money on the rematch.
Oh, man.
2 days after Frank and I went at it, Mikey Burnett, remember Mikey Burnett?
Yeah, old school.
Little Mikey Burnett walks up to me, goes, hey, Buff, I heard you took it to Trigg, right? I go, Mikey, how do you know? I've told like 5 people. He goes, Dana's telling everybody.
Oh, Jesus. God, that's hilarious. He didn't make a cent off of it. That's why. Right? He's trying to cash in on it.
Yeah, well, you know, the way these days are going, you know, it's just everybody wants to box. But that whole thing is starting to lighten up, guys. I work in that industry because I book Michael for these celebrity events and all that. And if you're not Jake or Logan Paul, you know, you're not really drawn in the numbers. And we know that Jake Paul's last fight with Tyron didn't do the pay-per-view numbers that were expected. Mm-hmm. But there's still draws. There's still big money being paid. Didn't Jake Paul just accept something with the PFL? Who did he just sign with? Do you guys know?
Hear anything? No,
I didn't think about it. He bought some shares in Endeavor, which was like the big news going on with Jake Paul.
Oh, really? Oh, cool for you.
Yeah. He's like, oh, hey, I'm going to go do all this. They're like, well, dude, you bought just like a couple of shares off of Robinhood. Like, you're not going to go into like Endeavor's corporate office and start like dictating.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Kick your feet up on their table.
He's got a way of talking. Well, you know, Thrower's coming up with their event March, was it Feb 26, you know, Rampage and Shannon are coaches and Vitor's fighting and Junior's fighting, Junior Dos Santos and more power to them. Let them go make their money. Let them do their thing. This is just, I used to be involved in celebrity boxing on Fox like 15 years ago or more. And Michael was announcing it. And when I made the deal for him and working with Fox, I realized this is really a cool thing because listen, we'd like to see celebrities go at it, but not every month. Space it out.
That's what I would
like three, four times a year, maybe max. If you do it every month, it's going to saturate it. And you're not going to have the talent to bring in the numbers.
And there's a reason why
that's happening right now.
Yeah. There's the reason why the circus comes to town and then leaves,
town, right?
Yeah. Like you can only see the bearded lady so many times. You're like, all right, I'm kind of over. Like it's once a year. You're like, oh, the circus is in town. This is great. Right. You pay your quarter, two bits of gander, see the lion tamer. And you're like, all right, I got my fix. Then they're gone and you're good. But when it's every Triller and Showtime and the Paul brothers and the celebrity boxes and crossovers, it's like when it's every weekend, it's not novel anymore.
Hey, Logan's a buddy and he's a really cool cat. Mm-hmm. Okay. He said to me himself, he goes, I can't control my brother. You know, they walk to a different tune, but they love each other. And let's face it, boxing fans are dying off. It's really that simple. Okay. Except for the two or three big fights a year, which mostly are Canelo or, you know, the heavyweights. They're bringing young eyeballs in.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. Okay. Whether those eyeballs will continue to watch boxing is another story, but they're bringing the eyeballs in. And that's what you got to do. You know, so more power to them. I think they're helping the sport. Totally.
Yeah. I don't think it's, I've never thought they're hurting the sport by any means. It's just, you know, it's just like the interest wanes off if you don't change something up. Either like you go legit and fight someone really, really good, or you take some time off and do something weird after. It's just, you know, I can only see the bearded lady so many times, Soto. Then I'm like, all right.
Dude, speaking of that, like celebrity boxing, that Danny Bonaducci face. You guys remember that when he was just
I was there.
Oh man, I wanted to fight somebody when I saw that.
Yeah, yeah. Give it to Bonaducci credit, man. He's willing to throw down.
He went out there. He was ready to go.
Yeah, he walks the walk. Of all the events that you've worked, not just UFC, but like every gig you've had over the last few decades, like what was the one that was the weirdest? Like a celebrity boxing or a crossover, or I don't know, anything you call, even corporate event. Was there something you were just like, what am I doing here?
I hope this check clears.
Get paid before you go, okay? If you're ready.
I'm not getting in the car until it's in my bank account, and then I'll head to the airport.
You know, I predetermine and get all the information ahead of time, and I pick and choose for my brother and myself the events that we do. I turn down a lot of events, and I've turned down some crazy events, but I've not really appeared in anything. Except for like the old days when I would do like fights in cowboy bars, you know, where there'd be better fights in the bar than are happening in the ring that I was in, or we'd do it in a ring and it's an MMA fight. I remember I did one with Frank Shamrock in Arizona one time and the guys are falling out of the ring and, you know, then big brawl happens at the end or we get rained out or, you know, there's just all those kind of instances. But I've been invited to do some underground stuff and some pretty crazy stuff. And, you know, you gotta just choose and pick and choose what's right. I'm a classy guy. I try to be classy. I try again to be a role model to my sphere of influence. I don't want to do anything that's going to taint that. You know, the closest thing you'll get to that is last week on my podcast, I had the Penthouse Pet of the Year, who's a big adult movie star on the show, and my co-host Sammy Phillips, who I've had my sex and relationship show with for years. And we get a little crazy out of character there a little bit, but it's all in jest. It's all in fun. That's it. I don't want to do anything to taint my image, because that's not RJ. You know me. That's not who I am. You know,
I feel you. So you've got Puncher's Chance. You've got obviously all your UFC gigs that you're doing. The Raiders.
Oh, can I tell you what? I'm interrupt one thing. Sorry. Oh. One of the cool things I did was I did an introduction of Jesus Christ fighting the devil, right? For a big church organization.
The ultimate throwdown, yeah. Right?
And that wasn't really weird. It was kind of really cool, but it's like, you know, you got 10,000 church members and everybody going crazy, and it was all like, you know, that kind of thing. That was pretty different.
Weighing in at 6'4", eons old, the devil.
Anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Please.
No, yeah, I was just wondering what else, you know, you've got. We saw your Puncher's Chance. We know about your commentating gigs. I know you've always got at least 17 things going right now. We go 3 hours going on your business stuff, but yeah. What else are you working on?
Well, the big thing coming out now is I have the most natural vitamin infused power energy drink in the world.
Okay.
There's nothing like this. There's no sugar. There's no of that crap taurine that's in all the others. No offense, Monster and Red Bull, but it's you shouldn't drink that every day to the level, you know, 2-3 cans a day. You can drink this multiple cans every day. I've even shown this to Jeff Nowitzki, the head of USADA. He loves it, right? And we made this for athletes. I did a soft launch in the UK over the last few months, and it's coming to America in March. By March, it'll be on Amazon. It'll be released in 40 countries around the world. If you can see it, look on the back here. Got my mug on it.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, there it is. The hands back.
It's time. This is going to be in everywhere, you know, the Hudson stores and the airports to the stores that you name it. And I'm going to follow it up with about 50 nutritional products over the next year, all natural, the best that possibly can be made.
Nice.
And I've been working on this for 2 years. And wow. This is my favorite. So, not my favorite. This is just a big thing. And this will be again in 40 countries, followed by my own line of cologne, the It's Time cologne, and toiletry line. So, eventually, there'll be a series of products there, from body wash, deodorant, shampoo, facial wash, moisturizer, all the stuff. I was manscaping in my 20s before manscaping ever came out. Yeah. And I've always been big on grooming myself, because I always felt the girls are taking care of themselves for me. I want to take care of myself for them. And hint, hint, guys, that's a little knowledge from, you know, 64-year-old me. Mm-hmm. Think about it. Take care of yourself, right?
Take care of that gooch, RJ.
Done. What's that?
Yeah.
No. Take care of that gooch, RJ. You got to take care of that, that taint.
So... So anyway, you'll be able to wake up and shampoo and wash with It's Time this and It's Time that, and you need a little energy during the day, little It's Time that, you need a little drink during the night, little Puncher's Chance that, and then you go to millions.co and you talk to all your athletes and you can buy merchandise. So these are all the projects that I'm working on now. I don't mean to throw it out so quickly, but if you follow me on Instagram, Bruce Buffer UFC, you'll hear all the announcements. Maybe.
There it is. Soto, you can take a shower with Bruce in the morning. You can wake up with Bruce with the energy drink. Get drunk with Bruce at night.
And watch you on TV announcing fights.
Announcing fights. Never ending.
Fights, Raider games. Man, that's like the perfect friend right there.
I try to be a good friend to all my friends. And also, during COVID, strangely enough, tragically, with a lot of businesses losing business, my business increased 300-400% in the virtual reality world. I mean, the videos, whether it's the cameos I do, which I do an absolute ton of, or you go to brucebuffer.com and you order business videos or weddings and all that stuff. And my partner, Kristen, and I, you know, we're just constantly busier than busy with that. But it's very fulfilling, because we don't charge a lot of money compared to what I've been offered. You know, I will try to make it affordable. Partial proceeds go to animal children and military charities. You know, you're going to pay it forward and give it back. Nice. But that whole business has absolutely exploded like a OnlyFans site.
There it is.
Coming full circle. Bruce, you're always so generous with your time. Glad you can come on. It was so awesome. Like, you know, I've known you for decades, but now in the UFC, now you're in my Raiders world as well. It's like, it's can't so get away cool. from you, nor what I want to. Bruce, this has been awesome. Thanks so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it too. And again, I just wish you all the best. Stay safe. It's no joke out there what's going on. Gotta stay safe.
You too.
Yeah, I've just been actually partially quarantined just being at the event last Saturday. I mean, that was probably a COVID haven there, you know, even though I was masked up. But aside from all the negative, the positive thing is let's have a great year. And my simple theory in life is to help everybody around me be healthy, happy, and prosperous. And then I know it'll come back to me. That's the way I entered work. That's the way I entered the octagon. That's the way I wake up in the morning. And that's that unselfish attitude that has proven very healthy for me. And be honest. Be honest. Unless you play me in poker, I will lie to my teeth. I'll be in Vegas, by the way.
Spread to my liars. What's poker that? Tables and strip clubs. That's where I do my lies.
Yeah. The last time I was at a strip club about 5 years ago, you know, then I see the phones coming out and it's like, nah, this isn't fun anymore. Yeah. So
that's why I chose never to be famous, Bruce. So I can go where I want, not have.
Yeah, you know what? I hate that. I'm not a big fan of the word celebrity, but I love it in Vegas. I don't have to stand in line. That's the one thing I really, really love. But you know what? I treat everybody equal. Just don't try to announce against me. I'll kick your ass.
Yeah, right.
Poker announcing against and an elevator. That's the elevator.
Don't do it. Don't try.
It's been great, Bruce. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, guys. Take care. All the best. Big cheers and no fears forever and warrior spirit forever. Thank you so much.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Bruce. That was fantastic. Breaking a little news on the Autumn Windbag.
Dude, we are breaking some shit.
Yeah. Yay us. You ready to do some What Up Windbags?
Oh, you know it.
Hell yeah. Bill Benoit. We really need to sign two big-time wide receivers, a good cornerback and safety, and pick up good defensive tackles. Oh, is that all?
Is that it?
I mean, he's not wrong, right? I feel like a true number one wide receiver, another really good wide receiver. Who are we keeping from our receiver core for next season? Renfro, Edwards. Deshaun's probably gone. I mean, Zay's good to have for depth because he knows, but really, we're going to need a true number one and another true number two. Seriously. Yeah. And we just talked, you know, and then
I think Hummer's a good number two. I mean, he's a good, he's a guy that we can use.
Otherwise it's going to be a lot of Darren Waller outside, Foster Moreau lining up at tight end. Because we just can't. It's just so crazy. There's so much wide receiver talent out there. There's so much. Every draft, there's like 10 guys that are difference makers. Every season, there's guys on free agency. We just can't get them. We can't keep them. Pain. You all right?
Yeah, I know. I hit my head on this thing.
Passing out already? Matthew. When you look at the quality of play that was displayed this playoff weekend, you'll realize how bad we suck. It's not like we suck. Obviously, we got 10 wins. It's just like the disparity of talent that is so we got through 10 wins and got to the playoffs on cojones and heart.
Look, man,
we willed our way.
I've been trying to say this for a long time, and like nobody seems to want to listen. We grinded out these wins. When you get to the playoffs, that grinding out, that's not going to work when that other team is just so much better than you are.
I don't know. The Niners are grinding out wins.
But they are very talented.
Super talented, yeah.
Okay? Their fucking defense is legitimately talented. They have one of the best offensive lines in the league. They don't have, like, they have, like, seven running backs on their team. Just four of them happen to play wide receiver.
Yeah.
You know, and they just find a way to get them the ball. It's crazy. And we just don't have that much talent on our team. And when you take a look at a game like – when you look at a game like the Bills and the Chiefs, and you look at what we have at quarterback, and you're like, dude, our quarterback can't do that. Our quarterback can't do that. How are we going to compete with shit like that? We have to have we can't compete with teams like that playing that same way. We have to do things like – the 49ers do. We can't play that same way and expect to keep up. Look at the two times that we played the Chiefs this year trying to play that same way. We got blown the fuck out. We can't play that same football, man. And I don't know, man. I'm not trying to be all doom and gloom and shit.
Yeah, you are.
This is the fucking problem, RJ. I'm trying to fucking speak truth here, and everyone's like, why is this guy even fucking on a Raiders podcast? All he does is talk shit on the Raiders. All he does is fucking talk shit.
You are pretty negative.
I'm fucking talking truth. You I'm are talking like a fucking guy that knows goddamn football. Yeah, we won 10 games. Whoop-de-fucking-do. Next year, when we play a second fucking place schedule, and this year when we had six last possession wins, it's going to be a different fucking story unless a lot of shit changes. Now, we're going to have a new GM and a new head coach, so a lot of shit is going to change. So we'll see how that goes.
You're the kind of guy that's going to, if you won the lottery, I would never hear the end of how much you had to pay in taxes. Like, you'll just find the worst in everything.
You would never.
No, I would. I would. You text me about how shitty it is that you have to pay taxes from your yacht in the Bahamas. Like, oh man, this is such bullshit. I can't believe this.
I would text you how
24% capital gains.
How much shittier this supermodel is licking my balls than the yesterday's supermodel
right?
was.
These hookers all want tips. Oh my God, my life is so hard. This is so terrible. That would be you.
God damn it.
Mark Connor. Mayock is taking the fall, and I don't like this. We even made the playoffs. I guarantee Mayock wasn't to blame for all the failed first rounders. I wonder.
Mark Mayock, is that you?
Well, this is the thing. I've been thinking about this.
Is Mark Connor, is Connor Mark Mayock's middle name? Is that Mark Connor Mayock? Is that him?
This is Burner. He's on the windbag trying to say, like, man, I'd hire him right away.
That's his ass.
I've been thinking about this. The Raiders, like this, like preseason, right? Before the season started, what was all the talk? I didn't know if I bought it all, but like all the talk was, man, they better go to the playoffs or heads are going to roll. They better do something big or heads going to roll. Someone's going to be the scapegoat. And everyone's saying, all right, Mayock was going to be the scapegoat, right? Because Gruden's not going anywhere. 10-year contract. Apparently, he did go somewhere the only way that he could. But the more I thought of it, like, Gruden could have been the scapegoat. Like, if they're looking for a scapegoat, it's Gruden. He's already gone. Just blame everything on him. He doesn't care. He doesn't have a say. And he's already gone. Like, there's no need for a scapegoat. You don't need to artificially manufacture a scapegoat for the Raiders' problems this season. Because you could just always point to Gruden. And honestly, it probably was. He was the final decision maker on everything in that building. Everything, any mistake Mayock may or did not make, Gruden had to sign off on it. Right? He's responsible for, like, the CEO of a company. He's responsible for everything good and bad that happens from the vice presidents to the janitor. Right? Everything that happened in that building from GM, offensive coordinator to the secretary, that was on Gruden. So this is why I truly feel that Mayock did do a poor job and Mark Davis knew it because he got fired. Because there wasn't a need for a scapegoat. You could just blame it on Gruden.
Yeah, bottom line. Bottom line, Mark Mayock was never the GM. So why give him a job that he never had? Plain and simple.
He was head of like scouting analysis.
He was never the GM. Why are you going to give him a job that he never had in the first place? That's fucking ridiculous.
Well, he could have been promoted to it, and I would have been curious to see how.
Why
he did.
Though? Why? Why?
Why?
Out of curiosity, you're running a fucking NFL franchise. Why were you give him a job that he never had in the first place? Just like you said, he has no experience dealing with contracts. He has no experience dealing with any type of like any of this.
He was a
free agency.
But that's my point. Shit. Like but guys come from somewhere and they prove that they can do the rest, right? Like everyone either comes from being from the scouting department or the legal department or player personnel or something like that.
Not him.
And he did it. Well, he did it. As a TV scout, essentially, right? Like that was his role. So again, I think it was, you know, because he got fired, I'm backing Mark Davis. But before that, I was like, all right, let's see what this guy's got.
Yeah, right? But the thing is that's that flippant attitude that you're trying to get away from. You're trying to get away from that mom and pop mentality. And the thing is, look, that's kind of like the mentality you're trying to get away from is this guy's been around here a while. Let's see what he can do. Dude, you're wasting seasons of players that are on your team that are good. You just had a really good draft class. You don't want to waste a year on a guy that hasn't really shown you that he can do the job. Why would you do that?
But that's the thing is, could he have? Like, that was what we were always debating all the last 3 years was, all right, these terrible first rounders, is that Gruden or Mayock?
But he's didn't awesome. Do it. He was we never the GM. Know. No, we don't know. Mark Davis does.
And again, that's why, again, why I back this. All right, this because Mark Davis fired him, it led me to believe it's like, okay, it was probably Mayock. Before that information, I was like, was it Mayock or wasn't it? And then Mark Davis fired him and said, all right, they don't need a scapegoat, right? They don't need to fire somebody to like keep the seas calm, you know? And it was like, okay, that's what told me it was Mayock. Before that information, I was like, I'd like to see how he does. Mark Davis firing him, like, okay, that settled it.
Mike Mayock, I will say this. Your daughter is...
Good sperm, Mayock. Great sperm. I don't know about your GMing.
Good seed.
Good seed. All right, that's it for us. Some new things coming up. We're going to start doing a weekly live chat. We've done live chats, but it's always kind of just been like here or there. We'll still do random ones when news breaks. We'll be on here to talk about it. Big things happen. We'll be here to talk about it. We're going to do a regular one too. So it's not always just like an emergency press conference. It's all right, let's shoot the shit. Let's talk to our fellow windbags. We'll have that coming on. We're going to start being more guest heavy like we were today with Bruce Buffer. Now that it's in the off season, we're going to talk to celebs. We're going to talk to writers. We're going to talk to analysts, other Raider fans, stuff like that. So keep your eyes peeled for slight changes in the off season compared to the regular season. Still the same show, just better in some ways.
Still the same hosts. Sorry, same hosts.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Still the beat of the same drum, a little different two-step. That's all. But until then. Knock on wood if you're with me.
That's a long-ass fucking show.
Are you, were you tired today? You're kind of dragging a little bit. I was worried about you.
Really?
You didn't feel it?
No.
You're like trying to get, I think what it is, it's when it's late at night and we have like, and you do like a really stats heavy segment. You're like trying to read stats and it's like kind of slowing you up.
Maybe
when you're just yourself is when you're at your best, when you're not worried about like sticking to a stat or like trying to like tell a number story and you're just bullshitting is when you're great.
Son of a bitch.
I think these stats are okay to have, to just kind of like have in your back pocket. But when you're just like reading stats, this doesn't make good radio. Cause it's hard, like when you're listening, you want like conviction instead of just like, all right, here's like seven numbers that I'm not seeing visually about somebody. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Work on that.
Yeah. Something to think about.
All right, G.
All right. Well, I don't know when we'll do another thing, but we'll do something before we close the week out. Some green screen fun.
Yeah.
I can't start this Tuesday to do the live chat. I'm going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
I think starting after the, like maybe next Tuesday,
all right.
We do our regular like 12:15 or something, like lunch with the windbags or.
All
right. I got to start editing.
All right, G.
Get you, bud. Later. Later. Thank you so much for listening to the Autumn Windbacks. We really appreciate it. Big thanks to Bruce Buffer for taking some time with us today. Make sure you follow us on social media at the Autumn Windbags, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all the good places, and especially YouTube. We're going to start doing some live Q&As and some chats on YouTube, which you're not going to want to miss. Until next time, later.